I remember a nurse saying that it's peaks and troughs. And at the time, I thought she said pigs and troughs. And my mum was like, no, Abby, that's not what it is. And I was like, I thought it was quite bizarre. There's so many pigs and troughs here. And everyone's kind of going through the same thing down there. You have like a bit of a community. It's like a club no one wants to be in.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
Right, let's do this. Welcome along to the Still Parents podcast supported by Global's Make Some Noise. I'm Dan here as ever with Ryan and Matt from the Lily May Foundation. Greetings.
Greetings.
You all right? Matt, you okay?
All right. Well, mate, thank you. Yeah.
Yes. Good. Which brings us to our guest that we have on this particular episode and joined us in the studio. I'd like to give a very warm welcome. Abby Harris, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Can we ask a little bit about you? What do you do for a living and how old you are and stuff like that?
Yeah, sure. I'm 31.
Okay.
And I work at Action on Preeclampsia as the Education and Operations Manager.
And was this something that came about as a result of...
Not really. It is linked because I did have preeclampsia and that's why I had the loss. Okay. But I didn't originally go into that. The job just came up when I was looking for a job and I couldn't believe that they're actually in the town that I live in.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I had reached out to them as a charity when I was getting pregnant again for like advice on a next pregnancy, etc. But I just never really read that they were from Evesham.
Right.
And I was just looking on Indeed and I'd had an office job before my pregnancy. So I was like looking for office jobs and I saw it and I was like, well, I need to do that.
Yeah.
Well, almost like it was there written for you.
Yeah, crazy. Yeah. And it was just, I was the administrator to start with. So just like entry level doing all of the office stuff and then just kind of got more involved. And yeah, now I am where I am.
What did you want to do when you were younger? Was there anything, you know, when we were at school and you had that, the first time you ever realised what a job was, it's like, I want to do that.
Yeah, I always find this such a weird question because I just
remember... Oh, don't worry, there's plenty more of them coming.
I just remember wanting to be a mum, like really sad, but I just kind of remember wanting to be a mum and my mum was a childminder when I was growing up, so I was always around children, always helping look out for them and stuff.
Are you from a big family?
No, I've just got my brother. I've got half siblings, but they're older than me, so we just live with my brother. But yeah, I used to look after children in nurseries and stuff. So I just kind of followed my mum's footsteps, really.
Yeah, it kind of came from that environment that you were just immersed in anyway, growing up.
But there's just not a lot of money in childcare.
You're right.
Yeah, there's not a lot of money in childcare. And also in nurseries, there's lots of paperwork. So you can find that the really caring, nurturing element that I felt I was good at can kind of take a backseat sometimes because there's lots of paperwork that you need to do.
Yeah, okay.
So I kind of started in a nursery and then I became a nanny and I was doing like private nannying for a couple of years, which was really good because I got lots of experience with different ages and different families and stuff. And then just wanted a bit more of a steady income because I wanted to start a family myself.
Okay.
And got a job in an office that my uncle worked at and I loved it. And then I realised I actually like working in offices and just looking after children every now and then and preferably just looking after my own. So that's when it changed.
Okay. So, Matt, what do you say about childcare and when you mentioned there's not much money in it? Because you would think it was the opposite, judging by how much, I remember nursery fees cost and everything.
It does cost so much money, but it doesn't go to the staff, not really.
You were quite keen to start a family from a young age. Am I correct saying that?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I straight away wanted to have kids. I did end up actually having 3 miscarriages before Jude.
Right.
I had like one missed miscarriage in the first pregnancy and that was like an unplanned pregnancy. So it was a range of emotions then because it was like, oh my goodness. I think I must have been like 18 or 19.
Can you remember how you felt at the time? Because it's something on our most recent episode, actually, we were talking about, again, the stereotype or that mentality from some people towards how it's looked at and it's not framed as serious as other losses when of course they are. Can you remember how you felt about that?
The missed miscarriage was really, really hard because that was the first one. And also
but you said you're only about 18. You're quite young when
I was young and I had all those first weeks of being like, oh my goodness, I can't believe this is happening. What do we do? There was a question mark around what we even did with the pregnancy for a while.
Yeah.
And then we were like, okay, this is it. Started to get a bit excited, started getting sickness, stuff like that. And then we went for the 12-week scan and they just couldn't find the baby, which I just thought, that's so odd. How can you not find a baby? Like, I haven't had a period in this long. I'm clearly pregnant. Mm. So then they obviously did like an internal scan and were like, oh, the baby died at 6 weeks and 6 days. And yeah, that was like devastating. That I don't think I even looked at the screen actually, because right. they were like, do you want to see? And I just thought, well, there's nothing to see apparently, because obviously on the first sonogram, they were like, I couldn't see anything. So I didn't think there was really anything to see. So I didn't even look. Mm. And then it was over the Easter bank holiday, I think. And they were like, oh, you can go to, because I was just at my Evesham hospital, so just the local hospital. And they were like, oh, you can go to Worcester Hospital to see what your options are, basically, because the baby hasn't come out. And they basically, when I got to Worcester, they kind of gave me some options that you could take some medication or you could come back in or you could just go away for a few days and see what happens. And it's, I was just going to go home. And I think they'd booked me in for like, because it was a bank holiday, they booked me in for like the Tuesday. And this was a Thursday that this happened.
Okay.
It was so long ago, I can't believe I remembered that it was a Thursday. But yeah.
It's weird how we remember the strangest little details, don't we?
Yeah, it was a Thursday in April, around Easter. And as soon as I was going to go home and then just wait a few days. And then if anything hadn't come out, then I was going to go and have the operation. Mm. And as soon as I walked through the door, I was like, oh God, it's happening. So that was really freaky because obviously it had been in there for like another 6 weeks, wanting to leave. Well, and then it did as soon as I got home, whether the scan might have like, you know, started something coming on. But obviously that meant that, as bad as that was at the time, it meant that I didn't have to go into hospital and have anything else. I just had to have a scan afterwards to make sure that everything had come away.
And then you had two, followed by a further two.
Yeah, I think because I then had that feeling of wanting to become a mum, because it had been so real for almost 12 weeks that that's what was going to happen.
It's a mindset, isn't it?
Yeah, that then actually made me realise, okay, yes, it was a bit early and I am a bit young, but this is what I want now. And I became kind of obsessed with it, to be honest. I was like, this is it now. This is my life. I'm going to be a mum.
When you say became kind of obsessed.
Well, I was like, I'm getting pregnant right now. Like, it was.
That wasn't your chat-up line, was it?
No, not really. But it did work because getting pregnant was fine.
Okay.
That was the easy bit. So I've actually had 5 pregnancies in total, but only have one live child at home. Which is crazy to me to think that I'm 31 and it's taken me, I was 18, 19 when that one happened. So I was 25, 26. How old is Thea? She's 6. So I was like 25 when I actually brought home a live baby. So that's quite a lot of years.
So your living baby is Thea?
Yeah, she's 6.
She's 6.
It's a nice name.
Yeah,
thank you. It's a nice name.
Yeah. And we'll mention Thea because... Before we get into Thea's middle name or middle initial?
Yeah, her middle name is J, literally just the letter J.
Yeah.
For her brother Jude, who I had 2 years before her.
Yeah. And it's Jude who you lost.
Yeah. So Jude passed away when he was 32 days old because he was really, really premature. I had him at 24 plus 5.
Right.
Because of severe early onset preeclampsia.
So with if you don't mind and you take as much time as you need, give as much detail as you wish to do, and if anyone, because we are streaming this one live, so if anyone would like to ask any questions, Ryan's casting an eye over the comments, and talk us through leading up to discovering when you were pregnant with Jude and then obviously into the details about, you know, how the loss came about.
Yeah, of course. So when I got pregnant with Jude, I was terrified because I'd had 3 miscarriages before him. I was like, okay, so I'm pregnant, but this doesn't mean I'm bringing a baby home. So
I say this so often, that innocence is gone, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It was a different partner than the 3 miscarriages that I'd had. So I kind of hoped that maybe that would make a difference.
Yeah,
not trying to blame any men, guys, but we blame ourselves so much. Obviously, we're carrying the babies that I just had this tiny bit of hope that maybe it'd be different because it's a different partner.
I think that's a natural thing too. Yeah, think, isn't it?
And it was a very much planned pregnancy. And we were very, very excited and everything was going fine. I think it was the March. Again, it only took me like 2 months to get pregnant. Really good at getting pregnant. 2 months to get pregnant. And then we had this family party in Manchester. And my nan, who lived in Spain, was down for the family party. And it was around Mother's Day. And the day after the family party, we went to McDonald's. And it was Mother's Day. It was Mother's Day in McDonald's. And we had a McDonald's breakfast before we were all heading our separate ways.
Can't go wrong with a McDonald's breakfast.
Yeah, I love that.
I want one now.
Yeah, and me.
Yeah. Yeah, this one did go wrong.
Why don't they do it as an all-day breakfast?
Yeah, they should. They really should.
Come on, Ronald. Sort it out.
Come on, Ronald.
Where's he now?
Who, Ronald?
You don't see him about, is it?
They do Ronald McDonald House.
They I do. Never see any pictures. I remember when I was a kid, used to go
he was
in.
All over the place.
Was there, the Hamburglar. And all the rest of it.
Hamburglar, remember?
Yeah, I reckon it might be something to do with children.
I was going to think he's probably been arrested.
I reckon Jimmy Savile probably has something to do with it.
And Mr. Blobby. It's probably where Mr. Blobby is.
Yeah, probably. Actually.
Do we put a disclaimer on that one?
Actually.
Yeah, I always found it a bit weird because it was clowns. I used to be terrified of them.
Oh, I like clowns.
Chris, don't like clowns.
Clowns. Fuck me, clowns scare the shit out of me.
Well, yeah, because when I was a kid. It.
Yeah, man.
Because I grew up during that.
Do you remember that film?
No, I wouldn't have watched it. I don't watch any horror films.
I think I watched it when I was about seven. Yeah. I've never looked at a clown.
I don't know. Oh. What kind of psycho makes a film like that?
It was nuts, wasn't it? Because I remember growing up, so I was, I watched E.T. And I thought, oh, that's quite wholesome and fun. Next one.
You watched E.T.?
Oh, it's a clown.
E.T. went home, though, didn't it?
Was there an It 2 as well?
Yes. Can we stop talking about clowns? Yeah. It's making me like...
So, sorry, you were
so anyway,
us,
we fucked up your story there.
Sorry,
You went for a McDonald's breakfast.
Yeah, basically, yeah. We went for a McDonald's breakfast and my nan just kind of like, she just fell on the floor, essentially. So she basically like, I don't know whether it was a stroke or a heart attack, but something happened to her mid-McDonald's breakfast. Sorry to lower the tone.
No.
But yeah, so that happened. And because we were in Manchester, she got transferred to a hospital in Manchester. And I was pregnant, but nobody knew because obviously it was before 12 weeks. Yeah. And because of my like history, I hadn't really told anyone. I think we'd only found out for like a week or two. And I was
very guarded about it.
Yeah, really guarded. Yeah. And the family party the night before was quite difficult. My partner had to drink a lot of drinks because I just kept pretending. Then I told my mum and my auntie and my nan, but I think she was kind of in like an induced coma at that point. But I told her and my mum and my auntie, I was like, they were all panicking, obviously, because my nan was in this situation. And I was like, I'm pregnant because I just felt like I couldn't keep it in then because it just felt like this is really stressful. And I was on progesterone then to try and prevent a miscarriage. Because I'd had all the tests, I should say, I had all the tests that you have after you've had three miscarriages because you usually get, you know, investigated after three miscarriages and there was nothing that they could find that was...
Sorry, how many years after the third miscarriage was this pregnancy?
I want to say like 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I just jump in there and say though now that there has actually been a change from the three, it's now two.
Oh, is it? That's
so recurrent
really
is now two rather than three.
That's really good.
Sorry, I just thought.
No.
I honestly remember going to the doctors and then being like, you need to have three. And it was more like the third pregnancy. I was thinking, I need to have it just so I can get the three.
I almost
had it down that it was going to miscarry anyway, but I was just like in a rush to get that third pregnancy so I could then get the investigations, which is...
Was that the mindset you went towards? Because it's interesting that you mentioned that, but it's not, again, it's something that we've heard a few times. I think it was Simon Philpott, one of our guests from way back in our early days. I put the link in the description for this. And he said that they got to the point where they were just expecting a loss as a way of helping to emotionally manage it. And it almost became some kind of like dark humor within their relationship.
Yeah.
Oh, this will happen again.
Yeah.
So yeah, you made the reveal, you told the family and
you
were trying to enjoy as much as you can, but wary of what had gone on before.
Yeah, and then because we were in that stressful situation where my nan was like in an induced coma, we were away from home. We were basically going to stay with her and hope that she would wake up.
Yeah.
We were there for like 7 days. My partner had to drive all the way back to get the progesterone, which is why I brought it up, because I was like, how am I going to hide this, that I'm on this medication? And it was quite funny because the whole family were like sleeping just like in the hospital in the waiting areas. And there was a Premier Inn over the road and we had like one family room. And my auntie and my mum were the only people that knew I was pregnant. And they were like, Abby needs to go to the family room. Like I was in there every night and everyone else was like, why is she getting dibs? But I was like, a secret pregnancy.
And, did everyone know, really? Because
I don't think they did. No, I honestly don't think they did.
I just thought Abby was getting a hotel room.
Yeah, they just thought, oh, what a princess. But that's kind of a running joke anyway, to be honest.
She thinks she is.
But it was actually then in the hospital, because my nan was called Judith, my auntie said to me in the corridor, like, if Nan doesn't pull through this and maybe the one that you're carrying is a boy, Jude's a lovely name.
Yeah.
And I put it in my notes in my phone and was like, yeah, but she's going to be okay. But then unfortunately she wasn't. She passed away like 2 days, no, one, 2 days before my birthday. Yeah. 3rd of April, she passed away. She never came round basically after the McDonald's. It was like a week of like, is she going to come round? So that was really quite a traumatic beginning to the pregnancy as well, to be honest. And then we came home and had the funeral and grieved and everything. And the 12-week scan came back perfect. And I was like even more shocked then, because I thought with my history and then the stressful beginning of it all, but I thought maybe the progesterone was just like magic and it had worked and it was all fine. So I think we probably announced it to everybody then, because I was like, I'm safe. 12 weeks, I'm safe.
It's a myth that 12 weeks. Again, I feel like I'm saying this a lot on the show, but it's something that we come back to quite a lot. In fact, I think Matt, let me bring him in, Matt, because you've mentioned this quite often, I think, when we've had previous guests talking about that, that 12 week is not like a magical safety line, is it? And it's almost the way it's portrayed that it is.
You think it is, don't you? And I think we lost with Callie first time round, but we thought 12 weeks, we're plain sailing now. And we've had, there's as you said, we've had guests on and we've had to speak to them. And a lot of the guests, with the naivety of the first pregnancy especially, have said,
it's a myth, isn't
it? Did you...
Because I thought that. I thought that with my, my first daughter. I was like, right, place everything. There's no way, anything. And it's just because I was... I mean, well, uneducated on it.
Generally, is the first scan you have, isn't it? Like, really?
But if you go back, if we go back to when we were conceived, always remember my mum saying, actually, is that they would never have known they were pregnant until they'd missed two or three periods.
Yeah.
And they would never then have had clarity until they went for a scan.
I think my mum said to me she only had one scan at 20 weeks.
Really?
I don't think she even had one at 12. I think they just had 20. And then that was genuinely, and then that was on. Yeah. And she doesn't remember anything. So when we went through it with Callie, she was like, "Well, you just came along, like, you know, we had one scan, and then we weren't watched. Then we literally turned up when it was time to give birth."
And that's where I think the myth comes from, is obviously it was. I mean, like I say, my mum, I know she had her first scan at 12 weeks, and that was the first time she knew she was pregnant. Apart from the fact that she'd been told by the doctor, we need to see if you've missed three periods, 12 weeks.
Yeah.
Man, how fast it changed. And that was, what, like 40, give or take, years ago. So what's it going to be like in another... You'll know you're pregnant before you're pregnant.
You literally know, like, day one now. Because like everyone has apps as well, don't they?
Yeah.
So, like, you know, you get those, like, first response tests that you can even take them, like, 2 days before you're due on your period.
But
like,
do you know, actually, myself and Amy... Amy took an early pregnancy test when we came back off holiday with, so it was with Freddie after we'd lost Lily. So we took an early pregnancy test.
How many weeks?
It was probably 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh, okay.
And the reason being is because we were actually on holiday in Portugal and I went to a pharmacy to get a pregnancy test because Amy thought she was pregnant.
Mm.
And we took a pregnancy test in Portugal and nothing came up. And then 2 or 3 days later, we took the early pregnancy ones when we came back home and it said she was pregnant. So I actually reckon I probably got an ovulation test when I was in Portugal because it weren't a pregnancy test.
No.
But actually, to some extent, finding out that early is crippling.
Yeah.
It's crippling. Recommend.
I'd rather not know that early.
I am so jealous of people that say they got to like 30 weeks and they didn't know.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm like, how on God's earth did somebody get to 30 weeks without knowing he's just mind-boggling for me?
I don't think it's even possible now, is there, with everything that's about and the way people live their lives?
We have as a charity, and I'm not going to name any names because it wouldn't be right to do so, but we have as a charity supported a couple of families, actually, one who didn't genuinely realise they were pregnant until they were having contractions.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Whoa.
It does happen.
Was she not showing?
No. And sadly, their baby died, and it was very early. I think it was it was about 23 weeks, something like that. Yeah.
Wow.
And so it does happen, and some people do. Unfortunately,
it's like a double whammy on the emotions,
that,
isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
And
she had no idea she was pregnant.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely no idea. Which is just crazy, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Whereas my wife said, openly admitted that she was pregnant everywhere. So she knew she was pregnant.
She said on the podcast. Yes, it's one of my favourite lines.
Said her eyes were pregnant.
Yeah. Wow. So
I remember that. It was a great episode when Matt's wife, Crystal, came on. She goes, yeah, I was pregnant everywhere. Are you okay, Abby? How are you finding hanging out with us three idiots so far?
Yeah, good. No, all good. Too fine.
So let's pick up where we were. We'll leave McDonald's firmly in the past now.
So where was I? 12-week scan. Everything was fine. Told everybody about it. It was fine. I think, like 15, 16 weeks, I was already putting maternity stuff on, like really wanted to milk it. Mm. Was getting the maternity photos to like announce to the world.
Did you find out the sex?
No, we didn't. No, it was all very exciting. I wanted a surprise, so I didn't find out the sex. And then I want to say I was eating everything in sight because you feel like you can. Like first successful pregnancy, I was like, well, I'm just going to eat everything.
Why the hell not?
Absolutely.
Why the hell not?
Yeah, I was eating
not
loads.
McDonald's, I'm guessing.
McDonald's chips.
All right, okay.
Yeah, anything salty. I was having like ready salted crisps. It's when I started having pizza with no tomato base, actually. It was when I was pregnant with Jude.
My wife had a craving for cigarette ash.
Oh, interesting.
I've heard that. I've heard other people have that.
I'm so happy there's other people because I thought she was just
heard
mental.
That. No, I've heard that.
Right.
Amy had a craving for, I'm sure it was celery with lemon curd.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God, really?
Something
that's
like that.
Disgusting.
It was absolutely nuts.
Crystal's sister had the pickled eggs.
Oh, God.
So she'd go to the chip shop and buy the actual jar on the counter.
I think I'd rather have the cigarette ash. Yeah. Wow. Switch, she's just there dipping a finger in a straight one.
Oh, my goodness.
Like she was dabbing.
Mine was just salt. Okay. I just wanted everything salty when I was pregnant with Jude.
Okay.
So then I think around 20 weeks, I was like quite big considering. But 20 week scan was fine. Everything was fine. Baby was measuring fine. Nothing to be concerned about.
So you relaxed into it by this point then?
Yeah,
still
definitely. I was apprehensive between 12 and 20, I think. I really wanted to have that. I think I had lots of early scans actually. Before the 12 weeks. Mm-hmm. But then once I'd got the 12 weeks, they were like, oh, you're fine now until like 20 weeks. So I was apprehensive because there was still a little part of me that thought they're going to scan me at 20 weeks and baby's only going to be 12 weeks or something from like when I last saw it.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was 20 weeks, you know, in size. So it was all fine. And then we went to Spain where my nan used to live to spread some of her ashes in Spain because that's where she lived. So I was probably around 23 weeks pregnant then, coming on to 24 weeks. In between 23 and 24 weeks pregnant, and I was really swollen. But it was August, and I was in Spain,
right?
And I was pregnant.
Yeah,
and we were walking really, you know, obscure places to spread my nan's ashes up some mountains that she probably could never have scaled herself anyway. But so everyone was very much like commenting on the fact that I had swollen feet and stuff like that. And I hadn't felt baby move yet anyway, because it was quite early on. I hadn't been that far in a pregnancy before.
Yeah.
I've had what I think is an anterior placenta, where the placenta's at the front, so you're not really likely to feel baby move that much anyway.
Okay.
So I hadn't had any movement, so I couldn't tell whether anything was wrong. I just knew that my feet were really swollen and I was generally just quite big. But I thought that's just because I've been eating a lot. Mm. And then I remember being quite concerned, like on one of the last days that I was on holiday in Spain, because I literally hurt to walk. I was that swollen in my calves and my ankles that I couldn't even really walk around without being in a lot of pain. So I basically thought, well, as soon as I get home, I need to like go to the doctors and see, you know, what's going on, which I did. I went to my GP probably like the day after we landed and they took my blood pressure and it was really high. I think that usually the bottom number for me was like in its 60s. So it runs quite low naturally. But I just remember the bottom number was 107. And he was like, oh, that's a bit high.
That's a big change.
And to be honest, I didn't really know much about what my blood pressure was before. But I think I must have had my notes with me. And he was like, oh, your booking blood pressure was this. And I was like, well, that's quite a difference.
Mm.
And then he dipped my wee and there was protein in there. So I think he mentioned preeclampsia then, but was very quite dismissive of it and was like, oh, but you're really early. So it's probably not that. But just as a precaution, you should go into triage. So he was happy for me to drive myself to Worcester Hospital, which is like a half an hour drive from the doctors that I was at. And I remember ringing my friend on the way and then like saying, oh, he mentioned preeclampsia. And she was like, oh, yeah, my colleague had that. Yeah, she was like 38 weeks and yeah, baby was fine. So I had this kind of like false sense of reassurance as well, because I hadn't really heard much about it, but
I was going to say, what did you know about it at the time?
I don't think I really remember knowing much about it at all, other than thinking that people had it quite late on in pregnancy and that it was something to do with your blood pressure. And I hadn't heard of any babies dying or anything like that. I just thought it was something that happened and then your baby came out and everything was fine. I kind of thought maybe I'll have to, I was already consultant led anyway because of the miscarriages. So I was like, oh, maybe they'll just keep a closer eye on me.
Yeah.
Went into triage. They did my blood pressure again and they kind of berated the GP for doing it with a automatic one because they like to do the...
Yeah, the pump.
The pumpy one, the manual, yeah.
I prefer the pumpy one.
Yeah, they like that one. And when they did that, my blood pressure, I think it was like 90-something then, that bottom number. So it had come down a little bit. So they were like, oh, you're probably nervous. It's probably white coat syndrome or, you know, it's your first pregnancy, you've had losses
white
before.
White coat syndrome?
Yeah.
Mm. Was that fear of doctors?
Yeah, generally, I think it is. The people say that their blood pressures go up when right, they see
okay.
a medical professional. Like you could do it at home and it'd be fine, but then in a hospital
right,
setting,
yeah, makes
it
could sense.
Go. It's a real thing, apparently, but I don't believe that's what I had, even though they were trying to convince me that's probably what it was. Lots of yeah. young first-time mums, I think, kind of get that impression that you're probably just worrying, like, it'll be fine. Yeah. And there was only, like, one plus of protein.
One.
Yeah. So they were kind of like... You're very early. You haven't got any other symptoms, like there's no headaches, there's no visual disturbances. It's summer and you're pregnant, so that's probably why you're swollen. Mm. So then they sent me home. I can't quite remember whether they told me to go and get a blood pressure check or not, but I think maybe I had a midwife appointment coming up or something. And they just told me at the midwife appointment to just look out for signs and symptoms, basically, of preeclampsia. And then one of the signs is a headache.
Well, I was just about to say, but one thing that alarms me straight away when you've just said that is mm-hmm. where they were talking about the headaches and visual disturbances. That's what usually comes at the end mm-hmm. when you're about to fit.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And when you're about to lose the baby and
yeah.
wow. potentially die yourself.
Yeah. So this was all like something that they obviously didn't explain to me at all. And the reason why I went into hospital and eventually had Jude was because I have a headache.
Yeah.
Literally just a headache.
So did things start to move quickly at that point?
Yeah, so basically I was at home and I had a headache and I rang triage and said, I've got this headache. I've been told to look out for headaches. Like, do I come in? And they were like, have you taken any paracetamol? I was like, yeah, it's not shifting because that's the only thing you can have when you're pregnant and it just doesn't work.
How many weeks again were you at this point?
24 weeks now. Headache wouldn't go away. She said maybe have a bath and take some paracetamol and then, you know, just ring us back if it doesn't go away. Mm. So that's what I did. I had a bath, had some more paracetamol and it didn't go away. And I honestly think it was just like mother's instinct. Like it wasn't even that painful. It just felt really frontal and very different to what a usual headache would
feel
like.
And you know your
like.
Body, don't you?
You really do. Yeah. And I really think that you just have to advocate for yourself in that
of
respect
course.
Because mum really does know best.
Yeah.
And
I remember Amy saying it was like dull. It was like a real dull
yeah.
headache that it felt like somebody was just putting pressure.
Pressure, yeah. yeah.
And really, it was over her eyes.
Yeah, really frontal, yeah. And so I ended up just going into triage basically because I was like, right, it's not going. So I came in, they did all the usual checks. They did my blood pressure, protein. And they had done what they call PET bloods then, which I think is looking at your kidney function and your liver function and things like that. And they'd all come back as in normal range from what they told me. I had then like more protein in my wee, but I also had other things in there like nitrates and blood and stuff. So they thought you probably got a urine infection. And as a woman, I'd had plenty of urine infections in my time and knew, you know, I'm fine. This is not one of those at all. I haven't got that. But my blood pressure, they never really seemed that concerned about it. They kept seeming to retake it and retake it until it got to a number that they felt was okay. But I always felt like it was okay, but it was still quite high for me.
Yeah.
So for someone who like runs with a blood pressure of 60 at the bottom, then anything 20 above that would be considered high. But for, you know, a doctor just on the rounds, if it's like 80 something, then they're probably like, oh, that's fine. It's below 90 or it's below 100. So I was never medicated for the hypertension side of things. And it was really quite sporadic that I'd have a bit of high blood pressure, then it would be gone again. So I was in there for monitoring for like a couple of hours. Baby's heartbeat, fine. They kept asking me like, is the baby moving? I was like, oh, I don't know. I've never felt the baby move. So that was kind of a pointless question. And then the consultant came in and said like, oh, because you're local to the hospital, you're only half an hour away. You can go home if you want. You don't have to stay overnight. And then just, I think I was either going to go back to the hospital in the morning or to the midwife to have another blood pressure check. So I was like literally getting my stuff ready to leave. And then the consultant that I was under that I'd been seeing in my local hospital, she was just about to leave on her shift and she just saw my name apparently and saw that I was in. So she just poked her head round and was like, Abby, what are you doing here? And I explained to her what happened. She had a look at my notes and she looked to the other consultant, the one that had just told me that I could go home, and said, I think we need to get her to labor and delivery, don't you? And
wow.
I was like, what? Still not really sure what she read in those notes, but she obviously read something that to her felt
more concerning.
That's
not going to put your mind at ease, is it? Like, you, no. Could you trust the experts?
I was about to go home. I was like, okay, this is fine. And she literally got me in a wheelchair and pushed me around to labor and delivery herself. And we were like, what's going on?
No way.
All my family were still in Spain as well, actually, because obviously we'd just come back from that holiday, but they were all still out there. I was round in labor and delivery in a hospital bed, and that consultant that I was under, she did like a bedside scan. And I remember she was scanning me and you could see the baby clear as day. And obviously they'd been doing the heartbeat. So I was like, baby's absolutely fine. I don't know what all this fuss is about. Because I also felt fine. I just had a bit of a headache, but like felt fine.
Yeah.
And then they measured like, I remember them measuring the femur and it said like 21 weeks and one day. I read it on the thing and I was like, why does it say that? And she was like, I'll explain it to you. I thought her bedside manner was shocking, but I actually think she was obviously just in a rush and didn't really have time for the pleasantries. But she was like, I'll explain it to you once I've done everything I need to do. And she was looking at all of these things on the scan and the blood flow and everything. And then she just kind of turned to me and said, like, this baby's going to have to come, like, really soon. And you might lose it because it's really small. And she explained that, like, the flow from the placenta to the baby had gone reverse. No, it hadn't. It had gone absent. So you have like a positive flow, then absent, then reverse. And at this point it was absent. So I didn't know he was a he then, but he hadn't been growing essentially because my placenta had obviously stopped feeding him the stuff that he needed to grow. So although his heart was beating and everything, he just was very, very little because I was 24 weeks and a couple of days by that point, but only measuring at like 21 weeks.
So the whole scenario has changed quite dramatically in a really short, you've gone from being, go home, come back in tomorrow, to being told this.
Yeah.
What was his heart rate variability like? Was he very, because we had something very similar with our recent daughter where we think Amy may have had a form of preeclampsia, but didn't really know.
Yeah.
And she had a heart rate, which was absolutely bang on the sort of money in terms of heart rate beats per minute.
Yeah.
But there was no variability. So they said basically she would have been like conserving her energy.
Oh, really?
So it was what they called a flat line trace. Not a flat line as in when somebody dies, but it was a flat line trace where the heart rate was high as it should have been, but there was no sort of jumping up and down in terms of the variability. So that's why bang, the sort of crash alarms went off and everything, and they got her out quite quickly.
Right.
Because there was no variability with her heart rate.
Oh, that's interesting.
So they said that she would have been conserving energy because she hadn't grown since about 28 weeks.
Oh, really?
But she was born at 32.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was never any mention of that. I kind of felt like he was doing okay in there, essentially, but he wasn't going to get any bigger. Mm. He wasn't going to get any better.
Mm.
It was the most odd feeling in the world because she then was like saying, you need to get steroids in, you need to start her on magnesium sulfate, get a cannula in, like, does she need to be catheterized? Like, there was lots going on around me.
When she said about, we need to get you and the baby delivered, did she mean right now or within?
Well, I think I must have asked her that at the time. And she was like, not right now. And they don't have the facilities to do it there either because it's too early. So she was like, I'm going to have to phone around and find a hospital that takes babies this early and has a bed for you as well. And that happened to be Liverpool, which was 3.5 hours away. So she kind of said, like, it's going to be, you're not going to get another week. Like, it's going to be days. It won't be today, she said. Like, you know, it's okay. But once it's gone absent, it's not going to go back positive. It will just be a case of it will go reverse. And when it's reverse, then you really need to get the baby out. But it was that balance of trying to keep baby in for as long as they can to increase the chance of survival, but also make sure that I'm okay. Because turns out that headache would have been swelling in my brain, which would have turned into an eclamptic fit. Had I not gone into hospital, it doesn't really bear thinking about, because it could have been, you know, a very different outcome.
Where's your mind at this point, Adam? Yeah. Because, like, genuinely, like, you, so much information just to take in all of a sudden, right? Like,
it's all just been flipped, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Wait, sorry, I know you said your family were in Spain.
Yeah.
Was your partner at the time with you?
Yeah. He was with me, but we hadn't, like, I remember them asking, like, well, have you got a bag? I was like, why would I have a bag ready? I'm 24 weeks. Yeah. Like, of course I haven't got a bag. I didn't even bring anything for me. I just thought, they're going to check my blood pressure. They're going to check baby's heartbeat, and then I'm going to go home. And we had the dog at home as well. So I remember when they said, oh, you're going to go to Liverpool, we're just going to get some transportation. You need to be on your mag sulfate for a bit before anyway. And they got the steroids in. They were like, you'll get an ambulance to Liverpool. So I had to send him home to try and sort the dog out, get someone to have the dog. So we actually went separately to Liverpool. So I was on my own in the ambulance, which is terrifying, actually. I do remember that for 3.5 hours in the dark, not knowing what was happening, with just like some random midwife next to me just kept checking my blood pressure. And the mag sulfate, I don't know whether you remember this with your wife, but it is horrible. You're like burning from the inside. Like it is. Yeah, I remember them warning me, and they were getting like the sick bowls to fan me, because they were like, it makes you feel like you're burning from the inside out. Horrific. But that's supposed to, they told me it's for my brain, but it's also for baby's brain. So it helps protect the baby's brain. But it also helps with eclamptic seizures, so that you're less likely to have them.
Because it lowers your diastolic blood pressure.
So this is just all of a sudden just gone crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
And in a short period of time. So you get to Liverpool.
Yeah, so we get to Liverpool. My partner arrives not long after as well. That was pretty quick. And I think we were greeted firstly by like the neonatal doctors that kind of, they kind of reassured me, if anything. They did tell me that obviously the likelihood of baby being okay was very slim, and especially because not only was I only 24 weeks, but they were measuring really small as well. So like, even if you were to have a baby at 24 weeks that was fully grown to 24 weeks, the chance would be slim. I mean, viability is 24 weeks, so anything before that, they wouldn't even, you know, it'd be classed as a miscarriage. Or if you had the baby, they wouldn't even try and revive it if it doesn't come out breathing. Yeah. So I was lucky in the sense that I'd passed that threshold, even though he was measuring smaller, because my dates showed that I was more than 24 weeks.
Is this what comes back to when you said about 21?
So I was worried then that because he measured at like 21 weeks, that they were going to be like, oh, he's not viable. But because I was actually 24 weeks over, they were like, okay, he's just small. So I met the neonatal doctors. They basically told me what would happen. They said that they hadn't, because obviously there was measurements. There was like, he was like 400 and something grams on the sonogram. And they said that they'd never had a baby that small. So they'd had babies that gestation before, but not actually that small. So they weren't even sure that they could intubate a baby that small.
Oh, wow, like, really?
They didn't know whether they'd actually have a tube small enough to get them breathing. So they had to obviously warn me that that could be the case. So even if they did come out breathing, or, you know, we might not actually have the equipment, like nowhere would have the equipment small enough for them to breathe.
Bad news after bad news after bad news.
Yeah.
Where were you mentally at the time, like taking, because I know it's probably a bit of a silly question, but you're taking this all on. And in that journey as well, you didn't have your partner at the time with you.
Yeah.
You're just there with your own thoughts.
Yeah, it was like information overload. And I think I'm one of those people that really like a lot of information. So I was just asking lots of questions. Like, I genuinely believe knowledge is power.
Yes.
And it's helped me through many things, having more knowledge about things.
There's two trains of thought on that, isn't there? One, knowledge is power, or ignorance is bliss.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I think my partner at the time was ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
And he just wanted to hear like a synopsis of what I'd been told, essentially.
Right.
I'd want all the medical jargon. I'd want everything. And he just wanted to know. Like,
so he wants the headline. Okay? He wanted the headline. Yeah. He wanted the story.
Yeah. And that continued into neonatal as well. Like, when you have those big discussions with the consultants,
yeah,
he would just want to hear like whether it's okay or not. But yeah, so the plan for me when I was in Liverpool was that to have another course of steroids the next day, and then be scanned in the morning just to see whether the blood flow had gone reverse or not. And the next morning it hadn't gone reverse. So I was like, okay, that's bought me another day, basically. They were only going to scan me in the mornings. And then the morning after that, it had gone reverse. And they were like, so you got to have your baby today. We found out at like 7 o'clock in the morning that I needed an emergency cesarean, and he wasn't born till 4:38 p.m. because obviously there was much more.
Yeah.
But that was really, really, really weird, because you're like in an emergency situation, but actually it's not that much of an emergency because they kept just pushing it back and pushing it back. And they gave me another round of magnesium sulfate as well whilst I was waiting. And the most abnormal thing was midwives would come and listen to the baby and his heartbeat was absolutely fine. And I was thinking, like, why are you going to take him out? Like, he's fine. I'm fine. Like, it was so, it was like an out-of-body experience where everyone's telling me that you're really unwell and that your baby needs to get out and they're better out than in. I was like, how on earth could they be better out than in? Like, they're way too small. They're not going to survive. And I think in my head, I was like, they're dead. They're going to die. As soon as they come out, they're going to die. So I prepared... Well, hadn't really. I mean, how can you prepare yourself? But I had told myself, because the chances were so slim, that that was it, basically. They also explained to me that I couldn't have a natural birth because that might cause too much stress on the baby. So I didn't have an option then. It had to be a cesarean. And because baby was so small, it had to be what they call a classical cesarean. So it's kind of how they used to do cesareans, where they go up and down on your uterus. Still across on the outside, but on the inside, they go up and down. It's like a bigger incision to get the baby out safer. But because of that, it means that you can't have a natural birth ever.
Oh, wow.
Again. Okay. So not only was that choice taken away from me then, it was kind of taken away from me for a lifetime.
Yeah.
Because you're more at risk of rupture. Yeah, I could never contract ever again. But so I've never felt that. So you also kind of feel robbed of that as a woman. I didn't get a birthing experience.
Yeah.
The cesarean was fine. There was like shitloads of people in the room. And they just like, they all introduced themselves, but I had no idea. Like, I wasn't really there. I was just like this. I just remember shaking a lot. I remember the spinal not really hurting at all. Like, I was so scared for that to go. Because like, cannulas hurt me so much. They could never get them in. They'd have to get the anesthetist person to come and do the cannula. So I thought, like, the epidural thing, the spinal, is just going to be horrific, but it was fine.
It's probably the drugs that were making you shake as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
The amount of magnesium you'd been pumped with and everything else. And
I remember just hearing what I can only describe as like a baby bird. Like the little sound of a baby bird. And I was like, what's that? And now I've read through the delivery notes. I think he'd actually been out for about 6 minutes by that point. And the vocal cords were heard when they tried to intubate him like four times, because they made a note to say like, oh, vocal cords heard, which I guess if he had been intubated properly, then you wouldn't be able to hear them.
Yeah.
But it meant that I heard his cry. Like, he actually cried, and I'll like forever treasure that I actually heard that. I wish I could have recorded it, but I can hear it if I like, but it was just like a little baby bird, the best sound in the world. And then obviously they told us it was a boy. I think they told us once they managed to intubate, and they put him in an incubator and they wheeled him alongside me, and I was like, I can't see him. I cannot see a thing at all. And the incubator was like full of moisture. Like, they'd made it really like damp in there to kind of reflect the placenta, the womb environment.
Yeah.
I remember just lying to them in the end and being like, because they were obviously in a rush to take him down to neonatal, and I kept saying like, I can't see him. And then they were like, have you seen him? I was like, yeah, I hadn't. I still hadn't seen him at this point, but I just obviously knew they needed to rush him down. And I just couldn't believe that he was actually breathing. So I was like, oh my God, just get him out. And then obviously stitched me up, and I went onto the recovery ward. And the recovery ward is full of women that have had their babies. And you're just lay there without your baby, and they're all there.
It comes up a lot, doesn't it?
With their babies, yeah. And I understand it's like, it's not exactly, sometimes it's unavoidable. Like, they don't have the beds, so it is what it is. But there should be like some kind of sign or something you can have at the bottom of your bed to say that like your baby's in NICU. There might be some signs, but I can't remember it at the time. And I just remember being told that I would get like a photo of him before I would go see him. And I kept asking them, like, can I see a photo? Can I see a photo? And I hadn't heard anything. And I was desperate to go and see him. Obviously, I didn't know how long he would live for. I needed to wait basically for the spinal to wear off, is what they were telling me, like 4 hours.
Yeah.
And I kept trying to get up and couldn't get up. And then I just remember trying to get up. And I don't think anyone told me, like, oh, be careful. And I just got up, and I remember screaming in pain and literally feeling like hot liquid had poured out of me. I was like, oh my goodness, something's happened. Collapsed back onto the bed. Everyone came rushing over. And I was convinced that I'd ripped like all my stitches out.
Yeah.
And they came and checked, and there was nothing.
Oh,
I was
wow.
like, that is the craziest thing, because I literally felt like there was liquid. I don't know whether something internally happened, but there was nothing. Yeah, it was horrific. The most pain I've ever experienced was that. And then, so they were giving me more like painkillers and stuff. And eventually I got wheeled down to see him. And again, I couldn't even really see him.
You sound like you're on pretty much everything by this time.
Yeah. I remember actually itching my face a lot. And then the lady in front of me was like, it's because you're running out of morphine. Like you're itching because you need more morphine.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, good to know. Top me up, please.
Because you're running out of morphine.
Yeah.
Turn into a baghead.
Yeah, literally. Like scratching.
Wow. You got Al Chapo in the bed next to you.
Yeah. Funny that she knew as well. She knew exactly what was happening.
Dealing in morphine. Yeah. Hey, have some more.
Wow.
So then we went down into neonatal. Again, I couldn't really see him because it was so humid in the incubator. And they also put like blankets over there to make it dark. And they're basically just trying to replicate the womb.
Yeah. Well, there's an irony there. It's almost like, well, if you're trying to replicate it, why?
Keep him in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they basically just explained to us that he was very little. So he was 495 grams when he was born, which was tiny. It's like the size of what a 21 week would be. So an absolute miracle that they managed to intubate him.
Yeah.
And it was just a touch and go, like, we don't know what's going to happen. He wasn't on many meds then, just like a few. I then found out that he was overdosed on morphine when he was born. But it was fine. And then it was just a case of, like, seeing what happened. So you were just kind of in this limbo of, they couldn't even tell us whether he'd have another hour or another day or what. It was just, like, waiting to see. And then I think my bloods had come back that my kidneys weren't doing very well. So I had to stay in hospital. And because we were in Liverpool, thankfully they had a Ronald McDonald House. So we were waiting for a bed there. But also I needed to stay in hospital anyway because my kidneys weren't doing very well. And you have midwives coming to see you, like trying to like get you to breastfeed, trying to get your milk in and stuff, which was just impossible when like you're 24 weeks, like you're not ready. Yeah, your boobs aren't ready to have milk at that point. So that was quite the nurses in neonatal made you believe that it was liquid gold. And that if you could get some milk out, that I was like going to save this baby's life. So it was a good distraction because I was like quite obsessed then with trying to get my milk flowing so that I could help him, but a lot of pressure at the same time. So it just went that every day was like, I mean, it wasn't every day, it was like every half an hour was like something different was happening. You know, he was on like the full amount of oxygen on like being intubated, so on a machine. And you basically just want to kind of wean them off that and go on to the different versions of oxygen. And it got like 2 weeks in and he still was on the machine. Oh, so yeah. That was their main concern, basically, was that he might never be able to get off of that machine. And they kept saying about, obviously, if you have too much oxygen, then they can get cerebral palsy. There was lots of concerns about that. His lungs kept collapsing. And infections generally are like the biggest risk in premature babies, is that lots of babies die from infections. Mm. So there was just lots of things that could go wrong. He had a couple of infections, but then recovered from them. So it was, again, a bit... I remember a nurse saying that it's peaks and troughs. And at the time, I thought she said pigs and troughs. And my mum was like, no, Abby, that's not what it is. And I was like, I thought it was quite bizarre. There's so many pigs and troughs here. And everyone's kind of going through the same thing down there. You have like a bit of a community. It's that club no one wants to be in.
Yeah.
And because we had the Ronald McDonald House as well, obviously you were kind of interacting with a lot of these parents and... So that was nice in one respect, but also very difficult as well. And then he had a few times where he was like, we were told to like expect the worst overnight, basically. So I'd just stay there overnight with him. But he'd always make it through. And it was always just such a surprise to everyone involved. They were like, oh my God. I remember when he got to a month old, they were like, he's a month old. Like they couldn't believe that he'd managed to get that far. But yet he was still not getting any better. He was just getting worse. Really like swollen from all the meds that they were pumping in. Then... They were talking about giving him steroids to take him off the machine, basically, to help him go onto like the CPAP. But you have to be like infection free. So they did like a blood test in the morning to make sure he was infection free before going on steroids. So this was like a real pivotal moment then, because I was like, oh, if he gets off this machine, then this is like to recovery.
Were they giving you like best case? What was the communication like in terms of what they're saying? Like, what was the best case and potential scenarios that you were looking?
They were saying like best case scenario is he would definitely be in for longer than he would have been if he had stayed inside me.
Okay.
So usually if you have a baby prematurely, they kind of come home around their due date. They kind of just get cooked as quick outside as they would inside, if that makes sense. But with him, because of the start that he'd had and how long he'd been on that oxygen machine for, they were like, it's unlikely that he's going to get home. You know, he'd probably going to be here for like a year essentially. So we knew we were in for the long haul. So we like gave in our notice on our rented house. We were buying a house. We gave our notice in on that. We were like, no, we're not buying it. Yeah. Thankfully, because I was past 24 weeks, I was on maternity. I was entitled to maternity. So that was fine. But my partner only had 2 weeks. So he had to go back. So that was stressful. I had to ring him so many times, be like, I need to come back because they don't think Jude's going to survive any longer.
Oh,
yeah. And then, yeah, 32 days, they were doing the infection markers, came back that he had an infection. And then it was like his kidneys weren't good. And they obviously can't do like dialysis on babies that small. They were basically saying to us, like, this is not going anywhere. They were giving him all the things that they could give him to make his kidneys get better. And every time, I mean, they were doing that heel prick test like every half an hour and printing out the results and being like, no, it's worse, it's worse, it's worse. And all that was happening was he was just like ballooning and looking more sick. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, it's not getting any better. And then they just basically said to us that like his liver's going now as well as his kidneys, lungs are shocked. And yeah, you're going to have to make a decision basically. And I think I always thought that when a baby dies, then it's because they've died. Like you haven't turned off a machine, like they've just died. But I think actually more often than not in that kind of situation, in a neonatal situation, it's more of actually a choice that the machine gets turned off because there's nothing they can do. It was kind of told to me like he's going to die and he either dies alone in this incubator on his own, or you can have him out on you and take all the machines and the tubes away and he can die with you. So inevitably, that's what we chose to do. But it was quite scary feeling like, how is this a choice?
Yeah.
We just wanted them to tell us that that was the right thing to do. It felt really, really bizarre. And actually, by this point, I'd only held him once. In neonatal, you're supposed to have a lot of kangaroo care, they call it, where baby comes in and sits on your chest. But because he was so poorly, they just weren't really allowing me to hold him. They got him out once for me because they thought he was going to die.
Yeah.
And he didn't. But again, it was only a very short hold. So it was kind of no question to me. There was no way I was just going to wait and watch and see him die. They told me all of his organs were failing. There was no coming back from it, essentially.
So you knew the decision that you'd already, in your head, you knew where this was going to go.
Yeah, definitely. So I just thought he's really fought the fight.
Yeah,
I owe him
everything. Sounds like a proper fire.
Yeah,
big time.
Yeah, everyone was very surprised. He did incredibly well.
Were your family back over from Spain by this point? Were they?
Yeah, they managed to get back for the birth.
Yeah.
There was like 2 days, but they got back. So that was good. And my mum stayed with me the whole time in Ronald McDonald. So that was good. So we were there for like 5 weeks because he was alive for like 4 weeks.
Mm.
And obviously we were in there for a bit before. We're actually in there for a bit afterwards as well because I think he died on like the Friday and funeral homes and things like that don't work over weekends. So they weren't going to come get him for another few days and I didn't want to leave without him.
Yeah.
So I ended up actually staying in Ronald McDonald with families that were going down to see their babies. And I just like stayed in the room. It was really, really odd.
Yeah.
Because that routine then, I'd become quite, what's the word? Not internalized, like I was so used to being
institutionalized.
Exactly. That's what I was. The routine was just, I got up, I went down to see him. I pumped by his bed.
It becomes the norm, doesn't it?
It was normal. That's what everyone did. Everyone just would go have their breakfast, go see the baby. Oh, okay. They need to do their checks now. So we'll go and do this. And you were just constantly there. So then for that, just to all of a sudden stop was horrific. The night that he died, so he died on me and within minutes of them taking the tube out, he died. That was horrific in itself for anyone that's ever held a baby dying. It's just horrific. But they were like obviously being as nice as they could, the midwives and everything, and took handprints and footprints and clay prints as well. So that's lovely that we've got that. And I also remember them saying that you can have photos taken. And at the time I was like, absolutely not. And then someone came to speak to me a little bit afterwards and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, actually. Because I hadn't even seen him without all of these tubes before. Yeah. Until he died, they had this like hat on that would keep the tube in. Sometimes he had those sunglasses on because he was having that therapy. So I hadn't really actually seen him as a baby. I'd just seen him as a baby with loads of tubes in. So actually I was like, as awful as it was to see him without of those, because obviously it meant that he had passed away, it was also quite nice to see what he looked like. He had my nose, and I was like, oh my God, you have my nose.
So you had the photos
done. So I did have the photos done, yeah. And I only looked at them once and never looked at them again, but I know that they're there if I need them. Exactly. And they do them really nice. They do them in black and white, which is actually a bit triggering now if I see black and white photos of babies.
Was it Remember My Baby that did it?
Could have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So they're basically an organisation that are in the hospitals, and they will go and take photos, or people that have taken their own photos, they'll edit them to make them look really nice. And
yeah, they
like
did
that
a really
well,
good
yeah.
job. And they did ones like with of his feet and his hands and stuff like that. So there's ones, I mean, this ring that I've got on now is my nan's, and that literally fit on his whole wrist.
Wow.
And there's like a photo of it like on his wrist. So there is nice photos as well that you don't have to see the whole of them. So I am glad that I had them done. They're there if I want to reflect on them. Yeah. And I had lots of photos and videos that I took of him in hospital as well that I have, that sometimes I'm like absolutely fine looking at, and other times I'm like, I cannot look at it at all. But it just varies throughout the year, I guess.
Can I just say, I genuinely think you speak so well.
Absolutely.
Like you do, like the way that you've told your story is, well, testament to Jude for a start, and testament to you as well. But I think you've just the dignity 100%. That you've said it, and the dignity that you've told us and everybody else that's been watching as well, and everybody else who's going to listen in the future as well. I think you've certainly done him proud. And I'm looking over at your partner now, because people won't know this in the studio, that your partner sat there, and I bet he's never been that quiet.
Well, my partner, right, it's Josh, isn't it? Yeah, Josh, he's got a fantastic suntan on the go. You guys just been away?
Yeah, Egypt.
Yeah.
Egypt.
Oh, nice.
Did you go?
Yeah.
Did you go?
I know.
I'm joking.
But he works outside a lot, so.
Right. If you want to find out information about where Abby works and perhaps get in touch, I'll stick the details in the description for that, if that's okay with you. Abby, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Still Parents podcast.
Thank you.
You've been an amazing insight with everything that you've been saying. This is the Still Parents podcast, supported by Global's Make Some Noise, and we will be back with another episode very, very soon. Abby, safe journey home. Josh, take care, buddy.
Thank you.
And we'll see you on the next one. Take care. Bye-bye.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.